is a paid program. The opinions contained within do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or sponsors of News Talk Radio WOBM AM 1160 and 1310.
Inside the Law is presented to educate listeners in Monmouth and Ocean counties about legal issues. The opinions expressed by the host, guests, and phone callers are strictly their own and do not necessarily reflect those of Town Square Media and are not intended to be a substitute for personal legal advice from your own attorney.
Your questions and comments are welcome at 732-505-1160. Inside the Law, talk radio for the Jersey Shore.
Good morning, Ocean and Monmouth County. This is Jason Wyatt from the law firm Novian Associates. Novian Associates is the Ocean and Monmouth County law firm you know that specializes in the area of law known as elder law and estate planning. This, of course, includes assisting clients with estate planning, the preparation of wills, powers of attorney, trusts, and living wills. We also specialize in adult Medicaid, asset protection, guardianships, estate settlement, and real estate. And I say that with some emphasis because the focus of today's show is going to be Real Estate 101, what the public and seniors need to know. You're listening to our show. It comes to you every other week here on WOBM-AM. Inside the Law, 1160 in Ocean County and 1310 AM in Monmouth County and all over the world on WOBMAM.com. You know our format. Every week we take you inside the law to learn about an issue or topic of interest related to the law. And today our topic, as I said, is Real Estate 101, what seniors need to know as well as what the general public needs to know. Our guest today is Mrs. Tina Orth. Good morning, Tina.
Good morning.
Tina is a experienced realtor with Crossroads Realty, has been working for Crossroads as an associate for 16 years, and if I wanted to list all of the awards she's won during those 16 years, that would probably take up almost the whole show, everything from Rookie of the Year to Top Producer to Listing Agent to Buyer's Agent, all the awards Crossroads has to give, you can bet that Tina's won them. And we're going to be chatting with Tina today about both real estate, residential real estate basics, as well as some kind of interesting points that relate specifically to a senior market. And we focus on a senior market, especially here in Ocean and Monmouth County, because we are very senior-focused counties in terms of, well, in a lot of different ways, in terms of what public services are available to seniors. We're very much destination counties within the state and on the eastern seaboard when it comes to retirement. And Tina was actually giving me a few stats before we came on the air that relate to just how senior-centric Ocean and Monmouth County. Tina, you want to go over those stats for us? Because I thought those were really interesting, just as a background before we really get into the nitty-gritty here this
morning. Sure. In Ocean County, we have 1,249 houses for sale that are in adult communities. And there's something for everyone. The lowest price point is $5,000, and the highest price point in Ocean County right now for an adult community is $569,000. And it's a four-bedroom, three-bath, 3,400-square-foot house.
So that's over 1,200 listings in just in adult communities?
Just an adult community that you can pick from.
So that's, I mean, she had me guess before we came on the air, and I think I said maybe 200. So, you know, it's six times that many, which I thought was very, very interesting. And also that the price point spread is so wide. I mean, what was the low one again, Tina?
The low is $5,000.
And what do you get for $5,000?
You get a one-bedroom, one-bath, manufactured home in an adult community in Whiting.
Okay.
And the most expensive active on the market today is Four Seasons in the Matitakong.
Okay.
And another interesting fact was in Monmouth County, Ocean County is just loaded with adult communities and places to
sure.
live. In Monmouth County, there's only 180 houses for sale in
right.
adult communities.
And what's the spread like there?
The spread like there is $9,995
oh,
for
wow.
a manufactured
okay.
home in Marlboro. And the highest price point is the Monmouth and Wall for $995,000. It's a four-bedroom, three-and-a-half-bath, 4,000-square-foot house. But it's interesting in adult community because the monthly maintenance fees or what you get in those fees
sure.
are so widespread.
Sure.
The Four Seasons, the $569,000 house. Their monthly fees are $260, and in Monmouth County, their monthly fees are $1,530.
So what you see there, and I think the numbers pointed out, is that you can probably find a retirement-focused community house anywhere, you know, anywhere in between there. You want to dream it up, it exists. And even though Ocean County has a lot more listings than Monmouth County, I actually thought, you know, when I guessed 200 for Ocean County, Monmouth County is pushing 200 itself. So it's not like, I mean, I guess what I'm saying is between the two counties, we do have a lot of retirement options. And that's only if you want to be in a adult community. We, of course, have traditional residential real estate. So that's part of the reason we wanted to focus some of today's real estate show on the senior buyer or seller, but we're going to talk more broadly to begin with. And I think Tina had some questions for me, and I'm certainly going to have some questions for her. But if anybody out there has questions for either of us during today's show, we are live and it is a call-in show. So that number to call is 732-505-1160. Again, that's 732-505-1160. That's a live call-in show, and our sound engineer Lauren will take your calls and let us know what you're calling about, and we'll take your question on the air if you have one. But if you are a bashful type of person or don't want to air your dirty laundry on the air, we also have ways to get in touch with us during the week besides the radio show, and that's you can give us a call at our office. We have two offices, one in Manchester and Ocean County and one in Seagirt and Monmouth County, and the number is 732-657-0600. That's the Novi & Associates main line, and you can ask for, you know, myself, Attorney Jason Wyatt by name, or ask for the real estate department, and you'll get one of our extremely experienced paraprofessionals, and they can also answer questions as well. Or if you prefer email, you can go that route too, which is info@novilaw.com, info@novilaw, and that's Novi with a Y as in Yankees. Had to throw my Derek Jeter plug in there, but novilaw.com. And you can also just peruse our website, which itself is www.novilaw.com, and we can submit a question that way and get in touch through the website. But for today's show, the call-in number is 732-505-1160. And we're talking about real estate 101, what seniors and the general public need to know. But if you have any kind of a legal question, we may not be able to give you the full answer, but we can give you some ideas if you do call in. So Tina, tell me a little bit about, just give me a little bit of background about Crossroads before we get started here.
Crossroads Realty is a family-owned business that has been in existence since 1966. I had the privilege to work with its founder, Mr. Byron Kotsis, who started a real estate company in Ocean County and then went to Monmouth County. And Mr. Byron Kotsis focused on everything. He focused on senior communities. He focused on commercial. He focused on development. He was just the forefront in the real estate industry.
And just coming up on 2 years since Mr. Kotsis passed away, but what an inspiration he was. Great business leader in Ocean and Monmouth County and a great business that he built. And Tina's been with Crossroads for 16 years and has been a top producer for all that time. But really, 18 years. Don't want to sell you short. Certainly, I've been practicing law for 10 years, and throughout that time, Tina has helped guide me and taught me a lot about the real estate world, and especially the adult community world. And if you ever have any questions, or if any of our audience does, Tina, what's the best way to get in touch with you or your office?
My direct number is 732-674-7913.
So I encourage you, Tina's not your typical realtor in a lot of ways, always going the extra mile to help her clients. And I'm sure even if you just have a general question, she's happy to answer them. So don't hesitate to get in touch with her. So today's show, just to give you everybody a brief outline on how it's going to go, is we're going to do kind of a little bit of a broad overview of the residential real estate world and make that specific to New Jersey, because we do have a lot of people in our state and in our listening audience who we know came from another state, or at least maybe they started out in New Jersey, left for a while and came back. And they're kind of the de facto process for buying and selling real estate does vary from state to state, in a lot of different ways. In some states, you know, attorneys aren't heavily involved. In other states, even sometimes realtors aren't heavily involved. But in New Jersey, they tend to be involved in most transactions. So we want to give everybody a broad overview of that real estate process, because we know that everybody has been through it. And for those that have been through it, maybe you've only done it once or twice, and it could have been 10, 20, 30, 40 years ago. So we want to just kind of go through the steps for you. And then we're going to focus in and drill down on some of the interesting facets of real estate as they pertain to senior clients who might be dealing with a move into the state as a retiree, or downsizing once, the kids have left the house, or who are selling their house to move to a continuing care facility, or who might be selling a house because they've lost a spouse or even a parent or something like that, and they're functioning as an executor, a trustee, or maybe under a power of attorney. But that's going to be the second half of the program. The first half we're going to focus on is the general real estate transaction concept.
So, Attorney Wyatt, tell us the role of an attorney in a real estate transaction, and why should I use one?
Well, I think to answer that question, Tina, everybody should have an understanding of the overall process of buying or selling a house. So let me take a step back and just go through walk you through that process, which I know you know, but the general public may not totally know each step of the way, because that kind of will help me explain where the attorney fits in and why it's a good idea to have one, and why in New Jersey we do have one. I don't know, what percentage of the time do you think? 90%+ of the time?
In Ocean County, yes. In
yeah.
South Jersey, sometimes people use title companies.
Right, a little less.
But there are many reasons, a multitude of reasons,
sure,
why someone should use an attorney.
And we'll get into them. But and remember, in a real estate transaction, there's always a buyer and a seller. And I think it's easier to explain the process starting from the seller's side, and then we'll talk a little bit about the buyer's side. So when you make that important decision to sell your house, one of the first things you have to do is you get to the emotional spot where you say, you know what, I'm ready to leave this place. And you usually have some sort of motivating factor. You want a bigger house, a smaller house. You want to not own a house anymore. You think the market's prime. There's always some motivating factor. And there's all sorts of different ones that motivate people to sell their house, jobs, retirement, whatever it might be. But when you get to that point, the first thing you have to consider is how you're going to sell your house. And with today's, internet being what it is, there is the possibility of selling a house yourself, but that road can be fairly tough. And so one of the first things that most sellers do is try to find the name of a realtor who can help them make some of the important initial decisions. And when they find that realtor and they feel comfortable with them, I would assume, Tina, that a lot of people probably have a conversation with you or maybe even meet with you before they sign a listing agreement. Is that right?
Yes, they do. Most people, believe it or not, interview real estate
right.
agents. And the interview process, when someone is looking for a realtor, the first thing they should look for is what experience do they have.
Absolutely.
How many closings have they done? Because the majority of the time, the average person only sells 3 houses in their lifetime.
Okay.
But realtors, sometimes I have 3 closings in a day or
sure.
a week.
Sure.
So the experience level of someone who does this for a living is far greater than just a regular homeowner.
And I encourage anybody out there who might be on the doorstep of listing their house to do that. Go through that interview process, because I know from working with realtors like Tina that there are realtors, professional realtors who do it for a living, who know what they're doing, who are very capable and very professional. And then there is a whole other group of realtors that sometimes I think of as hobbyists. They don't sell that many houses a year. They do it on the side. And sometimes I worry that they don't always give the best advice because they don't have the experience that somebody like Tina has. But eventually, hopefully, the informed consumer has interviewed a couple, finds a realtor that they're comfortable with, and signs a listing agreement with them. And part of that conversation will be not only that they're giving the listing to that realtor to market the property for sale, but also a discussion as to what the listing price should be. Is there, the realtor will always take into consideration what their timeline is. Do we need a real low price to move this quickly? Can we do something more middle of the market if somebody's willing to stay on the market a little longer? All those types of conversations. And then once you have a listing agreement in place and have discussed things like commission and listing price, at that point, the property will be listed. And tell me what a realtor does from that point, Tina. There's a whole process of getting the house out there in front of people.
Well, that's what we call marketing. Mm-hmm. We market the property. And at Crossroads Realty, we market in various, not only do we use print magazines.
Sure.
We use the internet. We mm-hmm. use websites. We automatically feed to about 20 other websites.
Mm-hmm.
Years ago, when I started in real estate, we had a book on the hood of our car.
Right.
And now it's going out everywhere. Your house is everywhere. And there are some of the Homes and Lands and some of the other magazines, depending on what the price point is.
Mm-hmm.
Some of our listings get automatically fed to the New York Times, which is a great market arena.
Or the Wall Street Journal, or it just depends. There's certain types of homes that go into certain print publications. And then on top of that, you have, the MLS websites. You have Realtor.com. You have Crossroads websites.
Trulia, Zillow.
And it's also probably, I think, the most of the brokers work with each other, agencies work with each other to cross-list as well, so that, if somebody has a Weikert buying agent, they're still going to find Crossroads listing agent houses.
Right.
Okay. And that's the first step, is the marketing phase. When you have a terrific professional realtor like Tina, eventually what you're going to get are offers on your property. And I say that plural. Maybe 3 or 4 years ago, I might have said an offer. But today we do see the real estate market trending slowly but steadily upwards, I'd say, over the last couple year and a half, 2 years. And I have had more than a few transactions where we've had multiple offers. And the idea is that once you receive an offer, the process can be different. Usually it starts out verbal, whether it's somebody finds a house on their own, maybe more often they'll have a buyer's agent that finds it for them or takes them to an open house, or they find the open house through the marketing efforts of the listing agent. Eventually you'll have a buyer in front of you. And usually what happens is, not always, but usually what happens is one of the realtors, I would say most commonly the buyer's realtor, you think that's right, Tina, presents the offer on the form contract?
Buyer's realtor presents it to the selling realtor.
And what I'm talking about is actually a New Jersey Association of Realtors standard form of real estate contract. And not everybody uses that contract, but most realtors do.
Most realtors do, and they should also include a pre-qualification.
Absolutely, and that's on the buyer's side, which I definitely want to get to in a minute, because most, not all, but a lot of buyers today are, buy with mortgage money, and that's we could do a whole show on the mortgage world right now. But the pre-qualification letter from a bank is proof to the seller that at least theoretically the buyer is qualified to buy that property, which is something they want to take into consideration before they take any particular buyer's offer. So the buyer's agent will present to the seller's agent a written offer to buy the house. Sometimes there's some negotiations back and forth on the price or the terms, the timeline for the closing, things like that. But assuming that everybody can negotiate a deal that looks good to them, eventually the seller's agent will present to their seller the agreement that's been discussed in written format on that that blank contract, the form contract with the blanks filled in, and the seller will sign it. So that sounds like you have a contract, but New Jersey's a little quirky, and a lot of states have this. We're not unique in that contract is signed and dated by everybody, but it has a 3-day waiting period built into it before it becomes a fully enforceable contract. So it's kind of like you have a contract, but it's kind of like you don't quite have a contract yet. And that 3-day period is called the attorney review period. And the attorney review period is, it can be 3 days. Sometimes it lasts longer. And the kind of idea behind it is that when that contract is signed, the buyer and the seller have had input and guidance from their realtor. But unlike most contracts in the world, and a contract is a legally enforceable agreement, unlike most contracts in the world, that contract was not specifically prepared for that client by an attorney because it was using a blank form contract. And because of that normal procedure, the attorney review clause is in those form contracts to permit both the buyer and the seller, if they want to take that contract to an attorney and ask them, you know, based on the deal, the transaction that we negotiated, as well as the default terms of the blank contract, are there any modifications, additions, subtractions, and or alterations that we should think about making in order to protect our rights, in order to make sure that the transaction goes smoothly, and so on and so forth. And that's really what the attorney review period is. It's a couple of days' time for the buyer and the seller to take that contract back to an attorney and have them give their opinion. And the attorneys, not always, but a lot of the time, they'll have a few things they want to modify. Some attorneys have a list of 40 things they like to change. Others have a list of 4. But it's up to their legal opinion, at, you know, if they want to request changes or not. It's also sometimes up to the motivation of the client. You know, some clients say, I don't want to make any changes. I want this house so bad that I'm okay, even if there's a spot in the contract you're a little worried about. I understand the risks and I'm willing to take them on. I just want to move forward. But most clients, in my experience, you know, they'll go through the process of allowing their attorney to give some input. And quite frankly, it's not as big and scary as most people make it out to be. Most attorney review periods, while not 3 days, are less than a week, give or take. And the idea is usually slight modifications of language that exists in the contract, but also adding provisions that sometimes are necessary and unique to the house. And the process is usually just a trading of a letter or two between two attorneys. Usually one attorney will write the other one a letter that says, you know, I've reviewed the contract. It's not okay the way it's written exactly, but we would find it acceptable if you were willing to make a couple of changes. And then the other lawyer gets that, and 90%+ of the time, at least in my office, I read the other lawyer's list of changes, and I say, these all look reasonable. Or maybe there's one I wanted to discuss with him or her and slightly modify. And then you send back a letter that lists, you know, your answer. Okay, everything you asked for looks okay. But by the way, before I accept it, I want a couple of changes myself. And so what the parties get in the long run at the end of the attorney review period is they get a modified contract that's a little bit more tailored to them in particular in their situation, and they get that with the input of their attorneys. And once everybody's satisfied that they've modified or added everything they need to add to the contract, and both of the attorneys and the buyer and the seller have signed off, then we're in a position that we call out of attorney review, which is also the same as being under contract. And at that point, it's a deal. It's a binding obligation for each party either to buy or sell the house, the piece of real estate. And there are certain things that have to get done from that point onwards. The first is that generally in New Jersey, actually, let me rewind. So to answer your question, Tina, probably the primary reason I think you need an attorney in a real estate transaction is to review the contract during the attorney review period. There's certainly a role for an attorney to play at the closing, at the end, but the attorney review portion is probably the most important, not in every transaction, but certainly in a lot of transactions. If there's anything that, you know, is out of the ordinary or that needs to be taken care of, especially if it's particular to that property, it needs to be incorporated into the attorney review period.
One of the things in attorney review that comes up a lot is between a buyer and seller, mm-hmm. the definition of what is an as-is sale.
Actually, that's a good point, and I'm glad you raised it, because almost every seller I run across says to me this is an as-is sale. And I tell my clients that that's true in some regards, but also it's kind of not true in other regards. And I'm going to get to that in 1 minute. So just table it for a second, but keep in mind that as-is concept. Because once you're under attorney review, there are a couple of things that happen. First of all, if a buyer is applying for a mortgage, even if they have a pre-qualification letter from a bank, that pre-qualification letter, is, while helpful, is not really binding for the bank, because generally a buyer gets a pre-qualification letter by going to see or talking on the phone with a mortgage representative and giving them verbal information about their background. I make this amount of money per year. I have this amount of cash reserves. My credit score is XYZ, things like that. And based on what they verbally disclosed to the mortgage representative, the mortgage or the bank, the mortgage company or the bank will give them a pre-qualification letter. But once you're under contract, although there are some exceptions to this, for most banks, once you're under contract, that's when the underwriting process begins. And the underwriting process is really kind of like some detective work that the bank needs to do to verify that everything you said verbally is in fact true, as well as to verify that the property that they might be writing a loan for is worth what you say it's worth. And so what they do then is they want to verify income, both through paperwork like pay stubs and tax returns, as well as verbally by talking to an employer. They want to verify employment status. If you're retired, they want to verify your retirement income. They want to see bank statements to substantiate the cash reserves that you have. They'll run a credit check to see what your credit score is. They will run an appraisal by a professional real estate appraiser to see what the property is really worth, because they don't want to supply money to foolish buyers who drastically overpay for property, because if that buyer defaults, the bank's recourse is to foreclose on the house, take possession of it, and sell it themselves to get paid back for what they lent. And if they overloan because the buyer's paying too much, then they might not be able to do that. And so that whole process, the mortgage process, it can take a while. In today's world, you know, 30 days is a pretty quick one. In the old days, you used to be able to do it in a week or two, but it's not the old days anymore, maybe for better, maybe for worse. It's not as easy as it once was to get a mortgage, although I will say I think it's getting a little bit easier. And that underwriting process sometimes can result in the transaction falling apart, which usually is when the buyer can't get the mortgage they thought they could get. I see this with self-employed people, because it's particularly hard for a bank to substantiate income for a self-employed person. You see it with people who didn't realize they had a credit issue. Sometimes they find it out in the course of a loan application. But the idea is that the contract, the real estate contract, will have a timeline built into it, a timeline for the buyer to get the mortgage. And at the end of that road, when the mortgage company is satisfied that this is a person that they can lend money to and this is a piece of property they're comfortable lending money for, the bank issues the buyer what's called a mortgage commitment. And that's the key piece. It's really just a letter if you boil it down, although there's other paperwork that goes with it. But it's the bank's promise to supply the buyer at the closing table with the money that they need to buy the house, in addition to whatever money they're bringing themselves. And that's kind of one of the first steps that people go through, is that, you know, as a buyer, from the buyer's side, is applying for that mortgage, having that lined up. Although people do shop around, you certainly are under the pressure of time under the contract, usually something like 30 days to secure that mortgage commitment. And if you can't get a mortgage, you're not forced to buy the house. That would be a little bit unfair, but the transaction would be canceled if you can't secure the mortgage. Another event that occurs, and this relates to your question, Tina, about an as-is sale, is generally the buyer is going to have the right under most New Jersey real estate contracts to conduct home inspections. And the contract gives them the right to conduct a lot of different types of home inspections, everything from, you know, lead-based paint testing to soil testing to sweeping for an underground storage tank to termite and infestation insect-type testing and review. And then the most common is just a standard generalized home inspection from a home inspector, which is a licensed type of contractor under New Jersey law. And they have a certain number of weeks to, in the industry, what would you say the industry standard is, Tina? 2 weeks?
2 weeks. 14 days.
14 days. I see 10 once in a while. You see 20 days once in a while. But 14 is probably the standard. They have about 14 days to hire a home inspector. Arrange with the seller a day where they can come with the home inspector and with a good agent like Tina. Their agent, too, will a lot of times be there. And, go through the house that they're about to buy with the home inspector, have him or her point out any issues that they might see as well as things that they take as good signs. And then eventually, a couple of days after the home visit, they'll receive a report from their home inspector, which details the condition of the property and does it section by section, the interior, the exterior, the roof, the porch, the basement, the plumbing, the electrical, and points out any potential lurking issues that the buyer might not have realized on their own. And a lot of times those are hidden issues. And I'm trying to think of some, Tina. What are some things that we see on home inspection reports that the home inspectors like to point out?
Electrical panels that are not up to code.
Especially older ones. Yep, that's a good one.
Older wiring.
Yep. Sometimes you see that.
Termites. Sometimes we have termites that we have to deal with.
Yep. Ocean County has sandy soil. We do have some termites. Yep. And in Monmouth County, too.
And what happens when there are different ramifications for remedies. If you have a mortgage, the property definitely has to be treated.
Sure. And sometimes that'll be a condition of the mortgage that certain issues have to be addressed. You see things sometimes with, leaky roofs. You see things sometimes with water heaters or air conditioning units or things like that that might not be functioning. Or if they are functioning, they might be really, really old and near the end of their useful life. So anyway, that home inspection process really relates to the concept of the as-is sale. Because once the buyer has the home inspection report in their hand, they have the right under the terms of the contract, unless it was drastically modified, which is rare, to take that home inspection report, send a copy to the seller and the seller's attorney, and point out the items within the report that they find of main concern to them. And they can ask the seller to address them. And the seller can address them in a couple of ways. Sometimes the seller will agree to repair or fix certain things. Other times the seller can agree to give a credit. If the cost of fixing X, Y, and Z is $250, well, then I'll lower the price by $250. I'll give you a credit, is what we call it, at closing of $250, so that after closing you can take care of it on your own timeline rather than us rushing around to get it done before closing. And other times the seller will say, I hear what you're saying. I don't know that I 100% agree with your home inspector. Maybe I do, maybe I don't. But I'm not doing anything. The house is what it is. Part of the reason it was priced the way it was priced was because it is an as-is sale. And I'm not making any repairs and I'm not, giving you any credits. And regardless of which one of those routes the seller goes down, whether they want to make a repair, whether they want to give a credit, or they want to say no, the buyer will have the opportunity to review their response and say, okay, that sounds good, let's go forward. Or, okay, I don't like your response. And obviously, sometimes there's a little bit of back and forth before this happens, but we can't work out an agreement. I'm gonna cancel the contract. And that is really the discussion you need to understand when talking about whether or not a property really is as is or not. Because it's a real estate transaction is as is on the seller's side in as much as they don't have to make any repairs or credits. They're not required to under the terms of most contracts. However, it is not as is in as much as the buyer is not required to buy the house if their home inspection reveals defects. And sometimes there's a certain bar that has to be reached, and that's one of the things sometimes we discuss during attorney reviews. so that, you know, a piece of peeling wallpaper doesn't become the basis for the cancellation of a contract. But the point is that the buyer is not locked into buying the house in an as-is condition if the home inspection report reveals issues and the buyer and the seller can't work them out. So in a lot of ways, it is an as-is sale, but at least in some regards, it isn't, because the buyer is not forced to buy it in that state if they find issues through their home inspection.
And today, when you list a property, you have to sign a seller's disclosure. So the seller has to disclose. It's not going to be a shock in your home inspection if they say that the heating system is 20 years old, because the seller has already disclosed that.
Right, and that should
in
be
in their listing documents.
And so that's basically priced in to whatever price they agree on. The only times that, and in my opinion, the reason that the buyer should have the right to walk is when the home inspector finds something that nobody knew was there. You know, if they reveals there's asbestos in the attic that nobody knew about and it's a major cleanup expense, or if there's foundation issues and all sorts of cracks and things like that that nobody knew existed, or an underground storage tank full of oil that nobody knew was there. So from that standpoint, it's fair to let the buyer walk. But on the other hand, like Tina points out, a seller's disclosure should reveal a lot of that stuff. And a buyer needs to know what they're getting into. The purpose, in my opinion, of that clause in the contract is not just to give the buyer the ability to walk away for any reason, because that's a little bit unfair to the seller, and could be used as a way for a buyer to get out of a deal that really they shouldn't otherwise. You know, they're breaking their promise. They really don't have the right to walk away. So that is the general couple of big ticket items that have to occur between the time you list your house and the time it's ready to be sold. Once you have a mortgage commitment and the home inspection issues have been addressed, then pretty much you're ready. You're on the fast track to closing at that point. And closing is just the word we use for actually sitting down at the table, although sometimes we do it by mail, and having the buyer bring money and have the seller turn over the property. And you do that. There's a lot of paperwork that has to get done, signing of deeds and the things that go with the deeds, turning over keys, adult community. There's gate passes sometimes and things like that. Allocating some expenses. You know, the buyer shouldn't pay for taxes for before they own the house, but the seller shouldn't pay for the taxes after they own the house. And there's a couple of things like that. But that's basically the idea. The closing is the exchange of everything at the table. And that's real estate 101, and it's taken up the first half of our and a little bit more of our program. But I wanted to make sure everybody had a working knowledge of that general concept. So that's I guess real estate in a nutshell, residential real estate in a nutshell. Just as a reminder to everybody, you're listening to Inside the Law on 1160 WOBM AM in Ocean County and on 1310 AM. in Monmouth County, as well as all over the world on the internet, www.wobmam.com. And there's a listen live link there on the website, so I encourage you to listen in. We do have a call-in number that's 732-505-1160. Again, it's 732-505-1160. I'm attorney Jason Wyatt from the law firm Novi & Associates. We are Ocean and Monmouth County law firm, and I'm here today with Tina Orth from Crossroads Realty, which is an Ocean and Monmouth County real estate agency, and Tina serves both counties. And if you missed part of today's show, if you have a question that we didn't answer, if you didn't want to call in with a question, we do encourage you to visit our website. It's www.novilaw.com, or shoot us an email at info@novilaw.com, or give us a ring at 732-657-0600. That's Novi & Associates main line. Again, 732-657-0600. Or, Tina, they can reach you at your main line at what number?
732-674-7913.
And those, you know, during the week, you know, get in touch with us if you do have a question that we didn't answer on the show. We do have an archive on our website at novilaw.com of our past shows, which you can access, which is a great way to get free information and see if maybe your question might have been addressed in a prior show. You can also come see us, both Tina and myself, as well as the other attorneys at Novi & Associates, do regular community events and seminars. And I'm just going to give a few of the upcoming ones here. we have this coming week on September 30th, a seminar on tax and trust planning that Mr. Novy and I are giving at the Captain's Inn. On October 1st, we're doing an estate planning senior real estate special course at the Hovnanian Building at 12 p.m. At 2 p.m., this is a really good one. 2 p.m. on October 6th at the Manchester Public Library, Mr. Novy is doing an estate planning seminar, and that's could be a really good one to come and attend because it's a small room. I've done a few seminars there. You get good access to Mr. Novy. You could ask him some questions, you know, wide open to the public. So that's at the Manchester Public Library at 2 p.m. on October 6th on general estate planning. And I'm doing on October 6th, the same day at 1 p.m., a wills and trusts review session and discussion at the Women's Club at Horizon in Barnegat on wills and trusts with Kathy Farley from Ocean First Trust Company. So if you have any interest in coming to see us, I do recommend it. You come out, and it's a great way to meet an attorney, kick the tires, get to know us a little bit, ask us some questions before you have to schedule an appointment, whether it's for real estate or otherwise. We also like to mention that if you are a member of or a president or vice president or secretary or treasurer or something like that in an organization, and you guys are looking to fill programming, have a speaker, we do enjoy, getting the public information about the legal world, because there's a lot of misinformation out there. There's a lot of misinformation about real estate transactions, especially as they relate to seniors or people that might be selling a piece of property as part of an estate or a trust or in relationship to a guardianship procedure for a parent or loved one. So we like to get out and teach that kind of process, as well as talk about just generally trusts and estates, estate planning, taxes, that's a big one for me, estate and inheritance taxes. So if you feel like that's something that might be of interest and you want a free speaker, we do recommend, we have a speakers bureau where we can give you a list of the types of topics that we talk about, and you can pick one to have us come mention to your civic group. So with that being said, we want to focus the last 15 minutes or so of our show here today on some of the specialty areas that we find in the world of senior real estate and adult community and retirement real estate, because they can be specialized. Do you agree, Tina?
I agree. So let me ask you this. If you buy a new house, should you change your will? That's always a question that gets asked.
It's actually a really good one, because the answer is, the lawyer answer is always, it depends. We tell our clients, when you're doing an estate plan, especially if you're, a retiree, you got to think about major life events as a tickler system to should spring in your mind that I should take a look at my estate plan, at my will, at my trust, or what have you, and see if this life event needs any kind of response in terms of a change or an addition or modification to that plan. And certainly moving would be one of those life events. So if you're buying a house, absolutely you would want to revisit what your will says. Some wills will have a specific bequest of a particular piece of property to a particular person, usually a child, but could be somebody else, niece, nephew, brother, sister, whatever it might be. And depending on how the prior attorney or drafter of that will worded it, there may be some changes that have to be made. If you refer to 1234 Main Street, and you're moving to 685 Robbins Road, well, then that bequest in the will becomes ineffective because that piece of property is no longer owned by you. On the other hand, sometimes the bequest will say, I leave any primary residence owned by me to, my son or my daughter, in which case it won't need to be updated. So that's a good question, Tina, because the answer is it depends. Most good attorneys who do trust and estate planning, in my opinion, will offer a free consultation to look at documents like that and give you an idea of whether they really do need to be updated or not. And certainly Novy & Associates does that. We offer a free hour consultation. And a lot of what we do in those hours is look at old documents and hear what's going on in people's lives. Everything from I just moved to the state to I just moved houses. I moved from Morris County or Somerset County or Bergen County to Ocean County or to Monmouth County. Do I need to adjust anything? So the answer is yes, a lot of the times you do, but you want to look at it to make sure that you're that you actually do need the, you know, the extra legal work to have that done.
So let me also ask you this. If something is in the will that somebody has left a house, mm-hmm. what happens to the deed? What happens with the deed when somebody passes away?
That's a good question. And there's a lot of different ways of where a deed can be worded. When there's a single person, it's pretty simple because they'll just have one person's name on the deed listed as the owner. But it gets more complicated when you have more than one person. And I have a lot of clients who come in and they say, oh, well, my husband or my wife's on the deed with me. But on the deed, I mean, that doesn't really, it's not a legal term. So on the deed is like, I'm on this chair, but, you know, am I sitting frontwards, backwards? How is that worded on the document itself can actually play an important role on what you might or might not need to do after somebody passes away. And the big surprise, and it creates a lot of headaches for people if they don't have an attorney look at this stuff, especially after or before a spouse dies, is, and even more so maybe when you own a piece of property with somebody who's a non-spouse, such as a child or a sibling, is how that document is written. Is it written such that my wife and I own the property as husband and wife? And if it just says that, what's not written but what's between the lines is that it's you own it as joint tenants with by the entirety, which is a joint form of ownership between spouses. And if that's what it says, if it either says husband and wife or if it says joint tenants by the entirety, that means that when the first one dies, the survivor owns the whole house automatically. There's no change in deed required, and if the survivor ever wants to sell the property, what they really only thing they really need is a death certificate of the spouse who died before them. Same thing goes for a piece of property owned by two or more people who aren't spouses, although the wording there would be either it would just say two people's names and it would be inferred, or it would have the words joint tenants with rights of survivorship. That would be actually that wouldn't be inferred. I take that back. That would have to be written. That would say that when the first, you know, of the people dies, the survivor inherits it automatically. So they're both forms of joint ownership, and that's in stark contrast to real estate that's owned as tenants by the entirety, which can still result in two or more people's names being listed, quote unquote, on the deed, but where the survivor does not automatically inherit the deceased person's share. And we do see that sometimes with husband and wife. And in fact, there's a lot of valid estate planning reasons to make a deed list a husband and wife as owners, as tenants by the entirety, rather than as joint owners. And that sometimes shocks clients because they don't remember why their lawyer 30 years ago changed it. And they just assume that when their husband or when their wife died that they inherited the whole thing. And then years later, it becomes a big headache when they find out that that's not true. And they sometimes have to go back and probate their husband or their wife's will 8 or 9 or 10 years after they died. It can create headaches in being able to sell it because the executor of the husband or wife's estate was never appointed to be able to sign the deed to the new buyer. So when you buy a new house or when you sell a house, it's something important to look at. How is the deed worded? How do I want it worded? What do I want the effect to be later? And sometimes just address any issues that might come up before you're at the closing table at the 11th hour and it becomes a big issue that might kill the deal.
And listeners can call your office and you'll review those documents?
Absolutely. One of the things we recommend when people come in to talk about estate planning especially is that they bring a copy of their deed, although they are becoming increasingly available through the county websites. If you have a copy, that's the easiest way so that we can look at how it's worded. You don't have to guess yourself as a layperson, and we can tell you, here's how it's worded. Here's what that means. Is this really what you want? Should we make some changes? Changing a deed, you know, is not that expensive, although New Jersey does have amongst the highest deed recording fees in the country. I'm sure that doesn't surprise our audience. You know, but it's relatively inexpensive compared to losing an entire real estate transaction over a deed headache that you didn't realize was there. So I think, does that answer your question, Tina?
Yes, it does.
Okay. So buying a house, do you change your will? Maybe. Buying a house, do you have to look at or change the deed or think about how it's worded? Maybe. sometimes when you're selling a house, those same things come up, especially if you're not the owner. So one thing after somebody dies that you have to look at is, especially if there's no surviving owner around, who has the right to sell it? And that oftentimes will become either the executor of the estate, who is a person appointed under that person, the deceased person's probated will, or a trustee of an existing trust. And if you have questions about trusts and as they relate to real estate, it's really beyond the scope of our show here this morning. We've done shows on it in the past, so I encourage you to go to novilaw.com and look those up. Because there are hundreds of different types of trusts. There are revocable trusts. There are irrevocable trusts. There are trusts designed to save taxes. There are trusts designed to help people plan for Medicaid. There are trusts designed to help people who have spending problems. There are trusts designed to take care of younger persons. We used to say minors, but, you know, we don't. 18 or 21 isn't quite the age that it once was, so sometimes it's 25 or 30. Lots and lots and lots of different types of trusts. And a lot of times there's a large overlap with the real estate world, but because there are so many different types of trusts, it's more than I can handle in today's show for sure. In fact, we could probably do a couple shows on it, and I think we have in the past. But, you know, estate sales, trust sales of real estate are fairly typical. And I'm sure you've seen them, Tina, right? You've represented executors, right?
Yes.
And trustees as well?
Yes, I have.
Yeah.
And that brings up another question. What documents would you need if you were the executor of an estate? What documents do you need to list that property?
Right. And that's an important question because we see this in my example, Tina, with the, sometimes husband and wife have a tenant by the tenant in common ownership format. And if I said tenant by the entirety before, just I want to make sure that I differentiate that from tenants in common. That's the one where two people can own it 50-50, but when the first one dies, the remaining 50% owner doesn't continue doesn't receive the deceased person's 50%. And you can see that between husband and wife. And what happens there is that the 50%, whether it's 50% because of a tenant in common situation or 100% because dad died 30 years ago, mom inherited the whole thing, and then mom died. The executor isn't the executor just because they have a will that says they are. They have to go through the probate process in New Jersey. And we've done shows on the probate process. It's not a big, scary thing in New Jersey. If you're in New York or Florida or one of these other states listening, it could be a bigger headache than New Jersey, although I hear that that's overblown sometimes. But it's very simple to probate a will in New Jersey for the most part, and it's not expensive, a couple hundred bucks at the most, not thousands of dollars, not 6% of the estate. Like I see a lot of, you know, people come with these silly estimates that say, oh, it's the probate costs are going to be 3% or 5% or 6% of the estate. That's not true. But the idea is that an executor is only an executor if they have what New Jersey calls a letter testamentary, which is a kind of a raised seal sort of document, official document that comes from the surrogates court, which is what we call the probate court in New Jersey. So the will has to have been probated and the surrogates court has to have issued that document to the executor before they will have legal authority to sell the house. And they need that to sign the listing agreement. They need that to sign the sales contract. They need that to sign the deed and the other paperwork at closing. So it's an important document, and that's an important point, Tina. Sometimes, depending on the situation, a trustee or administrator or executor will also have to be bonded so that they can get that document. But we see that a lot where we've got to go as the attorney and make sure that the selling executor or trustee has their ducks in a row in terms of paperwork so that we don't want those paperwork issues to become, and I'm sure you've seen this, Tina, you know, become a headache that has to be dealt with in a day or two leading up to closing. It should be done in the month or two leading up to listing so that it's taken care of. You agree?
Yes, sir.
Absolutely. So, you know, that's kind of the crux of our show today. We tried to focus a little bit on the broad aspects of real estate and then talk about some senior-centric things. I mentioned trust planning, will planning. You know, we touched on Medicaid very quickly. You know, we often hear about people that they're worried about the nursing home taking their house. You know, we could do a whole show on that as well. But if you have any questions in those areas, please do get in touch with us at novilaw.com, at the phone numbers that we've listed, or in person at one of our speaking engagements. Tina, thanks for coming on this morning.
Thank you. My pleasure.
As always, it's been nice to have you here, Ocean and Monmouth County and the rest of the world listening on the internet.
Lakewood Township, WADB Asbury Park, a Town Square media station. Live from the Preferred Home Healthcare Studio, this is the Jersey Shore's news leader. Listen online at WOBMAM.com.